Road live from Tokyo. With me today is the Indie Square Wallet team, Koji
Higashi
and Chris Moss. Right. I'm still like kind of learning these pronunciations here in Japanese, and learning is a loose word. It's not happening fast. So tell us what you're doing in the space right now with the Indie Square project. What I know you're very aligned with Spells of Genesis, but tell us more about what it is that you guys are doing outside of that space, or even with them for that matter.
Right. So I'm a co-founder of Indie Square, which provides counterparty API, wallet API, right? And I'm also actually a community director of counterparty now. So I do some like...
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I forgot about that.
I held an event in Tokyo as well for like, you know, explaining what kind of projects are in the counterparty community now and that kind of stuff as well. But that's more of a side job, more like a hobby thing.
Oh, right? No, that's
volunteer.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm a co-founder of IndieSquare, and I also I'm also leading Project Orv, which is more focused on gaming. That includes Spells of Genesis as well. So we're trying to build a platform for blockchain games, not just Spells of Genesis. Spells of Genesis is a big part right now, but hopefully we have more games like SOG in the future. Then you know, all sorts of new things will be possible using the blockchain.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I first got started, you know, with Counterparty, one of the things that I wanted to push for more than anything was more gaming. And it was hard. It was really fucking hard. You guys showed up, and I was really happy for that. And Spells of Genesis has come. We've got Rare Pepe now, which we also talk about at some point. What happens when you go to a game designer? Because I think there's a lot of efficiency that can be tackled with using certainly Counterparty, if not any sort of the Bitcoin-based asset for these things. What is that pitch like? Who's receptive? Who's not? Who do you talk to?
I guess I'll cover that really. So I'm kind of interested in the idea that. Because the blockchain isn't—it's open. It's kind of like an open database that a Spells of Genesis game item that's registered on the blockchain. Any other game is free to give their players access to that item. So, for example, if Spells of Genesis becomes very popular, a smaller game company might want to get some of their players and say, "Hey, you can use the Spells of Genesis card in our game as well." So, I think that's quite appealing to more indie. Game developers who kind of think, well, you know, we can kind of get some more users, we can attract those players. Another thing is, if the user has an ownership of their game item, the problem with games nowadays is you can spend hours like trying to defeat a boss and days trying to get a game item. But one problem is that once you've got it, it's kind of locked in that game, and you kind of stuck playing that game to make any use of it. But if it's Spells of Genesis, that it's a counterparty asset, it's transferable. So users tend to value their items more. And we've kind of seen with Project Orb, we let people trade the game items, that the retention rate, we kind of see, has increased because people actually own their game items. So that's quite attractive to some of the game devs we've been talking to. We can say, you know, if you implement some blockchain game items, then your users will appreciate that, and you know, you'll have a higher retention rate. So it's kind of the two things.
Right. Bitcoin's, you know, in my opinion, all about digital ownership or digital scarcity as well, right? If we apply that those characteristics to game items, we can have really rare, scarce game items. And also you can actually, so because we're using Counterparty, there is the built-in decentralized exchange. So you know, as a game company, you can issue your game items on the blockchain, and immediately that's tradable on the blockchain, and that's very powerful. And there are some like really, you know, expensive cards for SOG, you know, like Satoshi card, right?
Right.
Do you know how much one Satoshi card is worth right now?
No, I knew it was up there, but where is it at?
I know for a fact that somebody has bought one for about $5,000.
You're like, yeah, I know.
And the game, at that point, well, the game isn't properly released yet, but at that point, there wasn't even a beta version out. Like, the interesting thing, because the game items are on the blockchain, before the game is out, they're usable, and people
trade
and make their own games with them. But yeah.
And Satoshi card has 200 limited supply, I think.
It's provably rare.
Exactly, so it's provably rare. So, which means we locked the, well, not we, but the SOG team locked the supply, and you can, as a player, you can check if the claim is right. Because, So we're using the blockchain's transparency to our advantage.
Yeah, I mean, the thing when I see that the Satoshi card is going for $5,000, like, it's great, because it's but I mean, you also have, like, you, for better and worse, you have people that are engaged now in, like, the speculation of, like, engaged stuff. Which, frankly, like, I think that, I mean, I have a huge problem with that in the space, but I think that in the gaming space, it's a little bit less vulgar to me. If only because at least that there is, like, the pretense of utility, which you can see in varying ways, you know. People have been buying land spells, things like that, for a long time in these games. Counter-Strike skins, to a lesser degree, maybe. I don't know how much utility there is in some of that. But, no, I mean, for a game developer, like, that probably is a good thing that they can actually extract, like, that degree of investment from their community members. I mean, I like the idea of settling trades for in-game items with other in-game items, too. So, like, if you have, you know, this game, I don't know, maybe it's Final Fantasy, and you have this game, which is World of Warcraft, the reasons for wanting to switch between one and the other seem obvious to me. It doesn't mean that the World of Warcraft sword works there, but at least, like, these people that are, like, probably playing the same games can do, like, you know, cross-game swaps and such. So I always thought that would add, like, some value. Have you talked to many, like, game developers and you pitch it to them, and what do they say? Are they, like, enthusiastic? Are they skeptical?
Well, it's kind of... I've spoken to a few casually, and I've spoken to some people who just want to use blockchain. They just want to make a release saying, we're doing blockchain.
Oh,
and when you talk to them and ask them what they want... they want a database, kind of stuff. You know, so again, the big game companies, I think, really, they're interested, but just like how banks are interested in blockchain, but I don't think they really want to or can use it at the moment, because blockchain, it's not really about helping the big guys. It's about giving the smaller guys something new, a competitive edge. So it's more the indie guys who are interested, and they can offer new value. You know, which big companies can't, right?
For the audience, I noticed on the way over there, there's a Konami building is like right down the street.
Yeah.
And a lot of these Japanese companies are here with large buildings, I guess, in town, which is kind of cool. Like, you think at some level that it would be like a nice sales on-ramp for you guys. But the other thing, too, is I think that right now the actual scaling issues are pretty significant, too. Like, it's very hard to do high throughput with Bitcoin, let alone with Counterparty.
Well, this is kind of a misconception. Obviously, you know, better scaling would help, but one of the good things with game items is this misconception that if I want to use a Counterparty token to the game item, I've got to send it to the game, and I've got to send it to this game. It's not necessarily true. Just to simplify, you can basically have it on your wallet, and the games connect to your wallet through message signing, and you can prove you've got it. So I can say I've got this legendary sword, and the game said, oh yeah, he's proven he owns that private key, we're going to let him use it. So apart from the trading and getting the game item, they can really just sit in your wallet, and they don't have to necessarily be on chain.
Right. So that is a very, very good point.
Another thing is, so the Bitcoin transactions, transaction fees are, you know, increasing. It's very expensive now. It costs like, what, 20 cents worth of Bitcoin?
Especially with Counterparty, because you've got like op-return data in there. Makes it a little bit bigger.
Right. So that's definitely a concern, I would say. But at the same time, if you're trading Satoshi card, like which is worth like $5,000, you don't care if you pay 20 cents or whatever, right?
Yeah.
You just want a secure trading on the blockchain, and that's what Counterparty already provides. And with the technology advances, I'm sure it will improve.
It's important to say as well that, like, not every game item is going to be on the blockchain.
Right.
Like, we don't.
Yeah, that's.
There
that's
are some people who are making games.
Right.
There's I think it's Hunter Coin where Hunter Coin where
that's like completely on the blockchain.
Each turn is a block confirmation, that's great. But
it's kind of interesting.
I think I'm more interested in that. You have a normal game, which is a good game in itself, and it's kind of enriched or supplemented. Maybe some of the items are game are Counterparty game items, but the on-ramp is just like a normal game, and then there's value added to it.
You play regular games, and you get a really rare item in the game, and only rare items you can tokenize and, you know, record it on the blockchain, sort of. So
we take a slight deviation from some of this, but it does also relate. I've been exploring the Tokyo Akihabara district and some of the arcades there. Like, I've seen things I've never seen before. Have you?
You've accidentally walked into a pawn shop.
Otaku
is one of the things that I still don't think I understand. No, what I've seen, okay, you guys may not have seen this, but like, I walk into this arcade, there's a bunch of shit going on, but the thing that is most interested in me is that you go into like the third floor usually, and there'll be these machines, and they have a table like this, and people have their playing cards, and they put their playing cards down on the surface, and you'll see that the surface now has an awareness of where their cards are on the surface, but also what cards they are. So then perpendicular to this, on a screen in front of you, be like a gaming center where like you have an actual game board going on. So I've seen this in a couple different ways. So one thing I saw was a guy had like soccer playing cards, and this was, I think it was a Konami game actually, if I remember right. He had soccer playing cards, and he put like the soccer players down in like various positions onto a soccer field. And I guess corresponding with that would be the players that are on the field. And there's some buttons and stuff too. So he like played as them in addition to putting the cards down. And then he did like player swaps as he was like getting people in and out of the game. He had a little stack of cards here. There's regular Magic the Gathering looking cards. He had them right here, and he would just put them on there, take one off, take one on. So that was like one setup that I saw. Have you seen that before?
No.
Okay. I've seen it. I haven't.
Oh, yeah.
I've just seen
it.
I haven't
seen
it.
Like,
my wife's a big gamer, so she.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah. Of course.
Well, that's another thing too, weird, too. Is like there's a lot more women playing these games here in Tokyo than there are in the States.
Yeah.
What few arcades we have are either kids or, like, when they're older, it's all men. 100% men. And here there's like women doing it, and like, these women also have cards, and they'll put them down, and like the women games are really funny because like they're geared, like I don't know, almost like dollhouse type stuff, but like in an anime style.
Yeah.
So in addition to that, they have these other games. There's like a strategy game that I see people playing, and they put a card down. It's actually, this was the one that kind of got me interested. You put a card down, and then as you put the card down, like I guess it's like an army of troops. And you'll see on the screen there'll be like a 10x10 grid of like soldiers that appear on the table, and then you move it around to like where you want to like have them attack. You may lose that card, and that's marked like defunct, I've noticed, and you throw it out. Have you seen that at all?
I briefly, but I can't stand
it. You should go over to IKEA Bar. Go over to arcade, check that out. Yeah. It's very fucking cool.
Yeah.
I guess where I was going with this is like, you know, with Spells of Genesis doing cards and then the playing cards, like what potential is there to actually be doing some of this stuff as printed cards with, you know, like a Counterparty QR code? Has anyone talked about that?
Oh yeah, we've talked about it, you know. I think obviously the main focus is just to get, probably, I'm speaking on Spells of Genesis' behalf here, which I probably shouldn't do, but I guess the main focus is to get the app out and get that finished properly. But yeah, I think we've discussed about, you know, you have like a pack of cards and you have a physical card, because blockchain is great, but people like physical stuff.
Yeah, of course.
You know,
yeah.
But on the back is the private key that contains the blockchain form.
What would happen, I guess? So if you have a private key in the back, like I would imagine put like a foil over it or some security thing?
So actually, IndieSquare actually are talking about making kind of a Counterparty paper wallet type thing, which is like a gift card, which is the same thing. So you scan the code and it sweeps it into your app.
Gotcha.
Then you link to the game and that's it, right?
I think the blockchain is interesting because it's like an intersection between physical world and digital world, right? So
like
I think it makes
a
bridge, right? So it makes perfect sense to do something like that, actually. But we'll see. I don't know if it really works, but I think it's at least interesting to think about.
I think definitely in Japan. So we went to a Counterparty meetup, and when you entered the meetup, they'd give everybody a token.
Right.
The problem was it was great for the first five. Then, like, I haven't got enough inputs, or it's not a transaction. Then it was changing. There was a queue forming out. And so in Japan, they love to give out business cards. So I think like a Counterparty gift card, you know, you just give it out and people swoop it later. I can definitely see that taking off in Japan. And Counterparty, I think maybe Japan is... It's probably the most popular in Japan.
It's quite possibly.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know if you noticed, but I would say like almost 80% of Bitcoiners here have used Counterparty, or more like half of them have their own Counterparty tokens for whatever reason.
That's pretty interesting. I wasn't one meetup.
Well, okay, maybe you go in, maybe not these people, but just talk to people. Oh, you're going to meet pretty soon, but talk to people randomly at the meetup or something, and like, hey, have you heard of Counterparty, or do you have your wallet or something like that? They'll probably say yes. So
there's something weird about printed cards, and I saw it.
Yeah.
People like cards, and I get
weird.
Because like here you have these other games that are like blockchain based. They're like the most 3D MMORPG looking kind of stuff.
All
and
people, or no?
Well, no, I mean it basically is like back to like that arcade table kind of thing, like and yet it returns to cards. And you even see this on like a lot of games. Oh geez, I don't know. Like Nintendo seems to have a lot of these where like they're role playing games. and there's no pretense for cards, but yet as you play, like you get spell cards, or like Paper Mario has this. People like that concept. I don't know why. But
I guess maybe it has something to do with Japan's very much a cash base. Like they don't really like payment apps yet. You know, in other countries, people like send money through apps and stuff. So yeah. There's something to cling to physical things. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
Some PhD has written a paper on it somewhere.
Yeah. Japanese culture. I don't understand why the payment app is not catching on in Japan, because there is already a pretty good tool. And by Line, it's kind of like a WhatsApp in Japan, sort of.
I suspect it has Line something to do with regulation.
Yeah, but nobody uses it. I've never used it, and I've never seen anyone use it. So.
Well, I was hanging out with Mark Karpeles a couple days ago, and he had some like watch payment thing that he was totally into. He was all about it. But you know, I mean,
well,
Mark,
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, exactly. So he was kind of atypical. I haven't seen
right
since.
Exactly.
Well, the other thing too is I see a lot of Japanese people collecting these like action figures. Is that what they're called?
Yeah. Well,
like they look like
some
balls.
Some do. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're
otaku.
Right.
Otaku.
But they have a humongous like infrastructure here to like sell. This is the otaku.
Right. Otaku
right?
thing. Yeah.
So they have like an infrastructure. Well, what the hell do they do with these action figures? Like, do you have action figures?
No,
okay.
I've got one actually.
No,
I wanted to have like
but
one.
My wife has like a 100-200 Final Fantasy action figures. She loves it.
Yeah, exactly.
So then what happens? Are you going
tell,
to
tell
house?
Us about
yeah,
it.
Exactly.
Going to the house and literally, I live in a small room because it's Tokyo, so a house maybe is the size of this room.
Yeah.
About that much is covered in Final Fantasy, and I have a guitar in the corner, and
yeah.
That's about it. But and every time something new comes out, like she'll walk past the game centers with the claw machines, and there's a new one. Well, she'll spend like, you know, $20 on coins to get it out. It's just a collecting culture, maybe.
Yeah, I would say so.
Which is
very
it's strange because
is
there's
it?
Not much space in Tokyo, right?
No,
it'll be the opposite.
So that's
it's not cheap. I looked at the prices.
Oh, it's very expensive.
Yeah, people pay hundreds of dollars for this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's also interesting to me in that story is that your wife is into this, which is like totally cool. I think it's great. But normally, like the stereotype in the States is that this is only for men. This type of stuff.
I've
seen women are into it here too.
My wife and myself we had to do a bit of cosplay.
Nice.
And we used to live in Australia, and in Australia, and I'm from England, most cosplayers are men. Obviously, you know,
right.
They're kind of guys, you know, somewhere on the spectrum. And very few women do it. But in Japan, like, very rare to find a male cosplayer. They're all women. And I,
really?
All women. If you go to
yeah,
a well, obviously there are some
more
men.
Female.
Weird place, guys.
It's more female.
Totally
things,
weird.
Yeah.
I like it. I like it a lot,
yeah.
Actually.
Yeah.
It's not.
Well, I like
used
it.
To.
Yeah. I think just I don't know.
Wait, is she Asian then, or did
she's
you,
Japanese?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Then. So then she does represent like the culture. She's not like an Australian who came over here because she liked the
no,
culture.
No. She's,
she is the culture. And that is what I've seen.
She's probably not a typical Japanese because she married a Westerner, so there's a bit of a difference there. But definitely, it's like she's completely kind of otaku, I suppose. But one thing I've noticed in Japan is that, like, it's especially with women, all the female cosplayers and otaku, it's a secret life. So you can't retweet them on Twitter or because. Mm-hmm. They don't want their company to find out about it.
Right.
Or they don't want their parents.
Weird about pictures here. I don't give a shit. I'd rather ask for forgiveness than permission, so I just do whatever I want. But people are like kind of weird about that.
Yeah.
They don't like you taking pictures of them.
Well, this
sort of
is
stuff.
It's Japanese culture.
Yeah.
Everything has a place, and everything's great, and you can do whatever you want as long as it's in the right place and time.
Okay.
So you can be a drunk, crazy pervert as long as that's at the party. But at work, nothing happened last night.
That's
it's
true.
Very much everything separated and systematic like that.
That's
right.
Pragmatic. I won't like argue it.
America, everyone's the same everywhere.
Yeah,
that's true.
So it has its benefits and it has its negative side, right? You know, it's a.
Well, and I don't know if it's even negative. I'm trying to understand it. It's very different. Well, the other thing too is like, what's up with the fucking trash cans in this country? Where the hell did they?
This is a good point. And I heard this
point.
In another podcast. It's one of the sad things about human nature.
As well.
They had trash cans, but they made more trash because it made what's called a trash island. So if you have a trash can, then around that trash can is just full of trash and trash on the street. If you get rid of the trash can, Japanese people just take it home with them.
Right.
So by adding trash cans, it makes the place more dirty. That's they sort of they tested. So
some of you guys are gonna hate me, but I've been littering. Like I'll like do this thing.
Oh
like,
my god!
Oh, don't
I
feel bad.
Like a cup somewhere.
No, 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 no. Just go to 7-Eleven or something. Yeah. They're everywhere.
Don't
right?
feel bad because they lots of homeless people can. Here make because people don't beg in Japan. Homeless people don't beg for money. It's against the law, and they don't do it. They
not
make
many homeless people in general.
Oh, there are.
Really, I would
there's,
say
there are. There's an yeah. island. There's actually an island. Let's say there's a city of homeless people where it's
I
like
want to see this
cardboard
now.
Box. City
island with which
oh, I want to see
it's
this.
In some park
Demon
maybe you're
young
there's
in
like
go,
yeah there's like cardboard box
yeah I know where it is actually but it's,
Jeff,
it's not that bad
homeless people
yeah,
are polite
it's not
in
that
Japan
ghetto.
They kind of keep themselves out of the way but
I'm a curator of ghetto stuff
but there, if you want to go to if you want to go to ghetto
there
is from like a famous money Osaka.
Where's this?
Osaka.
3 hours by bullet
south,
train.
Yeah. So. But in Tokyo, there's one area that is supposed to be kind of bad and ghetto, but not really.
Yeah,
it's
look,
like very very tiny area. You're not going to get killed if you go there, you know?
Compared to the States, right? You think
it's very safe.
Yeah.
Very safe.
The people are very gentle. Like, it's very nice.
Yeah, yeah it's a great place for that, yeah.
It seems like, and maybe I'm wrong, but like, I'm going to use the word effeminate to some degree, because that's what it would be in America. I don't know if that's what it is, but like, I see that like women are more womanlike, guys are like more gentle, you know?
That's true.
Like.
That's true.
But
yeah, I think guys are technically, guys to other people, they're quite polite, but I think it's still quite a patriarchal, you know, patriarchal society.
Well,
and men
yeah,
have like this samurai thread
yeah,
where
exactly, right.
they'll keep their women in line kind of thing, a bit which
yeah.
you wouldn't have in the States. But women are definitely more.
Well, there's
feminine,
a weird attitude towards women too that I haven't been able to understand yet. But like, I mean, I feel like this country like loves its women, like it's a natural resource or something. And I see that because like they have these like special concessions towards women, which I find romantic. I like it. I think it's great. But that's kind of throwback.
Are you talking about the
earlier years in the United States, like 50 years ago? Like the trains will be a good example. Yeah.
Yeah, they have the.
They have women's like carts on the trains for
right.
certain days, which
yeah,
I think
yeah,
is
yeah.
nice.
Well, they tried to do that in Australia, and the women said no to it because they found it patronizing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not patronizing. I don't think it's patronizing. I think it's very nice.
I don't know. I kind of think it's a paradise for lesbian gropers.
Which is really...
They made it to stop gropers. Japan has a problem with men touching women
yeah.
on the train. So that's why they made it. And, you know, but...
You probably don't believe it still, but it happens, actually.
Huh.
I mean, like, I talk to my female friends and, like, a lot... Not all of them, but a lot of them actually have experience. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So... Well, that's never happened to me, obviously, but...
My
a lot
wife,
of women, it's actually
my wife
a serious
has,
problem.
My wife's had it a few times. She had one guy.
Yeah.
One
yeah.
guy came up.
There's a few. Well, one guy came up to her and said,
"I'll give you
Ichiman, which is guys. I mean, you know,
he offered her outside the station $100 to go into the toilet, have a number two, put it in some toilet paper, and give it to him. But she had to.
Sometimes they're into this. I don't. I mean, whatever. You're into it. That's great.
She had to take a photo to prove it was hers, not
yeah.
a dog's or something, and. So she didn't do it. I thought, you know, $100 or some shit. Yeah. So this again, it's Japan's a paradox of a country, right? It's,
yeah.
It has
it's
so polite
weird.
But so weird and seedy.
Yeah.
It's
well, the other thing is kind of weird too. Is that like I feel like a lot of the female stuff is like young girls, like
it would be. I mean, you're talking about a cover, right?
This is the first time I've heard that word.
A cover, yeah.
The
optimism
is the word I think they use, isn't it?
I've seen, like, the porn, like, the,
yeah.
Like, it has,
oh, yeah,
like,
porn,
like,
yeah.
Young
yeah.
girls, like, we have, like,
yeah.
schoolgirls, but like, it's not, like, everything's a schoolgirl. And here,
yeah.
I feel like almost, and, like, even,
yeah.
part is the art style, because, like, I think that the art style is, like, designed to sort of accentuate, like, younger women
think,
features, maybe.
I might be wrong here, but in the West, sexy women are kind of, you know, what men want. But in here, it's cute girls. I think... Speaking to my, okay, this is coming from my wife, and she's a Japanese lady, so she can say this. And her opinion is that Japanese men are intimidated by strong women. That's what she says.
That's
they like women
true.
Who kind of know their place and innocent,
yeah,
cute
true.
Girls because I could be speaking bullshit here, but generally in Japan, relationships were arranged. You know, in the West,
gotcha.
Men would have to kind of actually, you know, fight and try and, you know. Woo the girl, you know, but in Japan, generally, I think it was arranged, so men don't really have the
like,
skill set or the.
No, no,
that's
no,
what
I mean, like arranged.
Well, arranged marriages or.
No, not really, no. No,
okay.
I wish that was the case, sort of. Somebody set me up, and, but no, not really. But what you said is kind of right.
So
what is your background? That, because you seem very Americanized by most people's standards here. In a short time you've been hanging out in person, you're not like very American, but like relative to a lot of the people that right. seem like they're natives, you are highly in tune with some of the values that like this isn't news to you. You've thought about these things, which sounds like different than a lot of the people I've talked to that are like Japanese. So what's your background? Where did you come from?
Oh, well, I'm from Japan, but went to college in the U.S. actually and stayed there for 5 years. But I've been kind of like this even when I was in Japan. So kind of, you know.
Where'd you go in the United States? Where were you?
California.
Okay.
Yeah.
What part?
Near San Francisco, Berkeley.
Oh, nice. Yeah. That was a good opportunity.
Yeah. Like some riots going on right now in Berkeley. Yeah. And that's pretty cool.
Make
actually.
Bitcoin great.
Oh yeah, make Bitcoin great hat and something. Have you heard?
Yeah, yeah. I've watched the whole thing. Absolutely.
That's pretty funny.
So the tough guys here, what are their stories? I don't see drugs on the streets. I've been in the touristy areas, but like, does it have the same kind of stuff that America has, or is this like a significantly less like problematic part of the world?
There are certain areas in Tokyo that are kind of like that, but it's very limited. So one area in Shinjuku, for example, red light district in Shinjuku.
Kabukicho,
yeah. Where you can, you know, if you know your stuff, you can get drugs and everything.
I've heard that, but it's full of tourists, right? It's perfectly safe for people to walk through, right?
I've not met a single person that was intimidating to me.
I don't know. There's lots of theories on it. Yeah. You know, it's just like the Japanese are generally more compliant, and compliant is a bad word, but, you know, they're more respectful, so generally, you know.
So, Japanese mafia.
Yeah, it's strong.
For example.
Right.
But they don't give a crap about the common people, right?
They
don't want to cause any trouble, so they kind of stay quiet.
One theory is that they're very strong and active, so they keep away small gangs and small criminals.
Right.
You know, and
that's really typical of organized crime. I mean, that's hard for our governments generally. They add extra regulations on top of global infrastructure, and oftentimes what that means is policing. Ironically.
Yeah, it's controversial as well. You know, they've actually, you know, they kind of keep the petty crime, and they're not going to mug people.
Yeah.
And apparently, there's a rule where they kind of say just leave foreigners alone. And I think the accused, obviously, you know, they do bad things and they're bad people, but they love Japan, and maybe in some way, sick way, they want to protect Japan.
Yeah.
You know, so they don't want to hurt Japan's image, and they often donate drug or blood money to charity and things like that. So it's
they probably just do the regulatory environment. I mean, that's my view of things, maybe. But you know, they wouldn't have the opportunities.
I agree.
They wouldn't have the opportunities that they have if it wasn't regulated to some capacity.
You hear rumors that kind of. I have a theory that like so many shops and stores in Tokyo, you see so many stores which never have any customers, and obviously in expensive places. I think there's.
Stuff
like that. Apparently, they own a lot of the real estate, but
So, what do Japanese men think of Americans? Because like we are very loud. And do they think that we're like these sort of backwoods or bushmen types or cowboys, or do they have like respect for the American? Like, don't worry about offending the audience. We don't care. We just want to know. Because I'm genuinely curious. Like, what? Because we're so different. I feel like in terms of like our.
Yeah.
Our approach to things, and you know, the Japanese man is that they're quiet, very like conservative, like wants to take a look around. I feel like maybe reads poetry every once in a while, and like American men and Australian men, like are going to the bar and they get loud and get their advice, and they basically don't give a shit about anybody but their bros.
Well, if you're a foreigner, you're kind of excused in Japan. It's like you're a guest.
Yeah.
I mean, there are not many foreigners, anyways, right? So even if you're speaking loud, people will say, he's an outsider. But say, like, if I do that, for example, because I think, you know, well, I'm Japanese too, so like, then they'll kind of look at me like, oh, that guy. Because I'm supposed to know that, you know, custom and everything, right?
Yeah.
So that's what it is.
You're outgoing like an American would be, certainly by the standards I see here, like in terms of like, hello, I don't know, it's something about the Japanese culture, I feel like, oh, I'll tell you, for example, a lot of these women I see in some ways, like, they very much like keep their heads down, or they like do like this thing with their heads and such. Like, they're not sure as much as they are, but I see that a little bit. I don't know, and you don't necessarily have that as much.
I kind of think like it's my opinion, but not just with what Japanese people think about America. It's easy to hate Americans, and it's kind of popular to go, yeah, Americans are stupid, but secretly everybody wants to be a cowboy.
Americans
is envy, I think. You know,
Americans are definitely not hated, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
More liked. Like, there's this Japanese thing, like, everything about the US is better than Japan kind of mentality in a way.
Yeah.
That surprises me.
Yeah.
Well,
I know it's not true, but
I've been so impressed so much here. Like, I really have. This is
clean.
I know a lot of, well, not only that, but the culture is fucking cool. I get, this is all the Japanese stuff like that works off after a while, but I'm like, I'm a little bit like smothered by like the Akihabara area, and I'm just like, oh, this is great. Every fucking little thing that I used to love in my childhood at some level is like overrepresented here to like
right.
the nth degree. But also it is very clean. People are extremely nice to me. And little things too, there's a lot of organization here. Like I think that the subway system is like amazing.
Stuff works.
And it's like complicated too.
I kind of think Japan's a great place for a foreigner because the good thing about Japan, like you said, everything's convenient, clean, the crime is low, you know, that's great. The bad thing is it's if you're Japanese, it's difficult. You have to work hard and things are expected of you. You can't really be too individual. But as a foreigner, you get the benefits, but you're excused from the negative.
Right.
So, you know, I can we can walk around and be ourselves, but also get all the benefits.
Yeah,
so.
it's a good place to visit, probably, but probably not a good place to work in. Like, you don't want to work with Japanese companies, for example.
No.
Yeah, that's the thing.
That doesn't entirely surprise me. Not that I would think that Japanese companies are bad to work for, but there's a lot of the divide, I'm guessing, between the culture and that.
Well, you've worked for Japanese companies, so you know.
It was not too bad for me, but generally, people were too long and not very efficient, you know? It's just a cultural thing. So if you leave your office before your boss, like, you're not supposed to be working hard enough or something like that, for example.
Oh,
that kind of stuff, right?
Okay.
For example. So it's not very efficient. It's not very rational.
Right.
So.
I used to work in a company. I was an English teacher, which is quite a common thing for people to do when they first come here. And half the staff were Japanese, the management, and the teachers were, like, American and Australian. And there was an interesting incident where the boss kind of said, we've all got to work on Saturday, you know, because unexpected thing happened, and all the Japanese people were like, it's fine, yeah. We'll try hard, don't bury mass. And all the Americans go, fuck, this isn't in my contract, fuck you.
Right, exactly.
You know, and just,
exactly. Yeah, it's completely different.
And the English people were a bit kind of in between, because I think English people are kind of similar to Japanese in a way, but also similar to America. So they were like, oh, fuck's sake, yeah, we'll do it. Kind of
Yeah.
Well, that's quite interesting to see the kind of conflict, you know.
But well, I guess we're talking so much about non-crypto stuff, but I like this conversation, though.
One last question here. Actually, your time's a little limited. I know we're already like over our budget, but let's talk about Rare Pepe.
Yeah, that's...
In a non-ironic capacity, I want to say that Rare Pepe is very interesting to me, mostly because what you have here is, and this is so obvious to me now that it would never have been prior. You have this like decentralized brand of like authenticated scarcity or like you know provable scarcity, and you have a game that's like weirdly arising out of nothing from like individuals' own contributions.
Right.
What does that mean to you? Do you see that in similar terms? And like, what can we learn from this? Is that actually a model that you think we can benefit from going forward, particularly with what you guys are doing?
Right. I definitely say yes. It's a very interesting model. So it just doesn't have to be just Rare Pepe, right? It could be anything else. So user-generated content, basically. So user, you know, draw something, or it could be a sound, whatever, right? And it's a trade, now it's tradable on the blockchain, and because it's on the open blockchain, just like with Rare Pepe, someone's building a game now, like a third-party developer building a game. Based on these images, basically. And that's a very interesting model, like based on this open network. So I definitely think there is a potential there, and I actually collect, you know, Rare Pepe cards myself. I have 100.
Cool.
Yeah,
okay, here you go.
I even have like Koji Pepe.
This is a phenomenon now, guys. I've been going to conferences and stuff regularly where Rare Pepe comes up, and I decided before you know it, it's like, oh, this show,
I'm
this
proud.
Is real. This is really happening.
I'm a proud owner of 106 Rare Pepe cards. So yeah,
106 Rare Pepe cards.
It's somehow like 400 or 450 or whatever.
That's hilarious.
It's crazy.
And you?
I have some Pepe cards, and I have one game that people are using Pepe in, which is a geocaching game, and people are dropping Pepes around and collecting each other's Pepe, and I'm using it in another game.
Yeah.
It's what I said before. Pepe has a following, and all those assets are open for any developer to use. So I'm very much incentivized to add Pepe to my game. So if you have this Pepe card, you can use a Pepe character. So
if Pepe has a great network, a lot of users, Now, like Chris, a third-party developer, for example, has an incentive to attract those users to his own application or game or whatever, right?
Of course.
Have you heard of Takara? So that's the geocaching app he mentioned.
Oh, yeah, I have, actually. Yeah, we were putting out that in South Florida for a little bit.
Oh, yeah. That's cool. So,
I didn't know we were using that for a company, but it makes perfect sense.
As long as it's on Counterparty.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, it was Bitcoin before, but we added Counterparty tokens, and then...
That's what happened then, because we were using Bitcoin. Yeah,
Bitcoin, you know, there's not so much incentive for people to drop Bitcoin because Bitcoin costs money. Some people are doing it, but tokens, people love just to make a token and spread it around, you know.
Like maybe you can drop tokens as coupons or tickets or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And as a promotion.
What makes one Pepe card more or less valuable than the others? Because, like, what seems to me is, and I haven't looked at this recently, is, like, it's not just a matter of scarcity. Because you have two cards that have, like, the same issuance, but they're very close by.
Right.
And the prices can be completely different. So, like, if someone sits down to participate in what is effectively the Rare Pepe game, what like inputs do you think are working the best for them? And what do you think that means?
That's a difficult question.
I think if they were somewhat popular before, helps a lot. So, for example, you know, if you make, you know, Chris DeRose Pepe, you've obviously got a following and it's got some sort of credibility.
Right.
Another thing is there is artwork attached to Pepe. Which, if people just like, this card looks cool.
Yeah.
You know, so I think
dankness.
Probably the
how dankness.
Proof of dankness.
On dankness, basically, right?
Yeah.
The more dank it is, the more expensive it is. Right?
I actually watched a video by a professor who was talking about, he was an anthropologist or something, he was talking about Pepe. It's like, he got kind of deep into it, and he kind of said, the thing about, no, well, a frog, the frog is used in conventional, like, you know, mythology. It's a creature who is a land creature and a water creature. It's kind of something in the middle. It doesn't belong to any group. And he was saying that's why the internet trolls, the people on the internet, kind of relate to a Pepe, because people on the internet are kind of, they're kind of this mix between liberal but right wing, and they're not, they don't, people get confused and they kind of relate to this Pepe, which, what is it? And I think there's a bit of truth in that with Bitcoiners.
No. Maybe it's funny. I mean, you say that. For me, Pepe has always been very metacognitive. Like, it was oftentimes like commentary about itself or commentary about, like, the commentary even. And so that, if you look at some, like, the fun Pepe art, I mean, even like to the degree that you have pee pee poo poo Pepe, like, that is in fact a statement on, like, the nature of the construction of the word Pepe. And I don't know. For me, I always thought that's what it had. But with troll culture, you typically see, like, commentary by the reference of the commentary being like a theme. That's what it was supposed to be on Pepe. Maybe I'm the one who's weird. Maybe it has more to do with the amphibious nature. I don't know.
It's I guess people have different ideas. But what's interesting is Japan is always this Galapagos effect of a country where it has slightly different to, you know, America, but we see Pepe taken up in Japan, and the psyche is different.
Pepe's pretty popular too.
Yeah, so, is it an American or is it something?
Probably a character. People love characters in Japan.
Yeah.
Right.
So
there's actually,
I don't think they get the jokes of Pepe, because it's quite...
How can they, right?
They don't really have memes so much in Japan like we do, you know, in the West with, like, internet, you know, Grumpy Cat and all this kind of stuff. They don't really have that so much. But Pepe, maybe it's just people we know, but...
Is Pepe just Hello Kitty for, like, 3-year-old white men in America?
No, girls like Pepe.
Do they not?
Yeah. In Japan?
From some of the girls, I
suppose. Whoa, not stereotypical girls, but, some. maybe your wife will like it, too. I don't know.
Yeah, man.
Is there a Hello Kitty Pepe? Maybe we
actually, I think there is.
Is there every time I think of a Pepe, someone's already being...
Yeah, I think I've seen it. Yeah. But it's interesting, so... I actually wrote an article on Rare Pepe in Japanese, and then I didn't think that would catch on, because it's kind of an American, well, not just American, but, you know, Western thing to do, right?
Yeah.
But, like, say, for example, these are all made by Japanese. Most of the stuff I have is actually Japanese
made. I've
seen
those,
so, like,
I
these, right?
About that. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, there's a lot of Japanese Pepe artists now.
I've noticed that.
Yeah, like,
never,
this is really well made.
I never put it together that it was you guys actually doing it.
That's not us, but, like, you know.
No, Japanese. I just figured it was somebody who was doing it in that style. But that makes sense.
Yeah. And some are making quite a lot of money, actually.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Good for them.
Yeah, I know.
At the Counterparty meetup, we had one in Tokyo, and before I went... I think we dropped about maybe 20 or 30
20 Pepe cards
around the meetup.
Yeah.
And they were all gone. And there's only Japanese people at this place.
Someone's hunting for Pepe or something.
Rare Pepe is bigger than they were up here. I'm really into the Rare Pepe whole phenomenon. Because what's happening there is like very unprecedented. It's very different than what you saw with like Dogecoin or some of these other things.
Well, it's not trying to be anything that it isn't.
In a way. I agree. Yeah. And there's also a lot of room for participation. I felt like the Doge, like, it was fine and good, but at the end of the day, that was like a pump. But like here you're describing like a community that is like completely divorced from the originators, who are somehow finding their own way in this by creating their own style of Pepe.
Right.
And in these ways, I think it's a little different. I don't know.
It'll be interesting. Yeah. I guess I'm a bit concerned about, would there be kind of like, if people keep making new Pepe cards, well, is this too many or that kind of...
Right.
I'm a little concerned about Pepe Cash, because like, Pepe Cash is in fact like very Ponzi-like. Here's the thing I have to say about that, is that you can't recognize that like Pepe Cash is not like a store of value for you. But, like, put it under reason why I want it, and like, I don't know what to tell you.
Well, got listed on a Japanese exchange, so.
Oh, yeah.
Vice is like, Zyf, it's pumping. Zyf, like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but everybody kind of knows it's a joke, and nobody...
I would think so.
Maybe eventually that'll change, but we know that, you know, it's not supposed to be like a real currency or anything, so.
We'll see.
Maybe some are taking
it
seriously.
I lost my life savings on Pepe Cash, like, yeah.
Right. Well, the other thing about Pepe Cash is it is dialogue about the nature of a lot of these altcoins, too. So, like, you look at Pepe Cash, and, like, generally there's been an awareness with Pepe Cash of the pump and hump. The fact that, like, this is commentary on the nature of other people's claims in the space. So, like, at some level, I thought that what that represented was, like, some kind of pushback on, like, the just rampant, like...
It's satire, in a way.
That's what I always thought with it.
Yeah, like people talk about saying it'd be great just to make something called Scam Coin, or, you know, or...
Right, yeah,
and
exactly.
That's what they've kind of done with Pepe. but made it a little bit fun, you know, I suppose.
Right.
So.
Right.
But who knows, you know.
Where can people find out more about you, Chris?
I'm Mandelduck at Twitter. I'm @Mandelduck at Twitter, or Mandelduck.com.
And Cookie?
My Twitter account is always kind of easy to remember. Coin_N_Piece, I think. So I'm trying to write more articles in English too. I'm actually working on a piece about the Japanese regulation of virtual currencies, and I'm going to release it maybe like tomorrow. But
great.
So yeah, check that out. And I think that's actually kind of a bad law, but outside the community, people assume it's a really progressive good law and, you know, right step for the Japanese community and stuff like that. But I really disagree, and I'm gonna write more about that.
So,
tell me
that when it comes out.
It'll be on Reddit.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
It's interesting.
Thanks for being on the show.
No, thank you so much.